Today's episode of A Waste of Time with It's The Real is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company that lets you choose from over 1,500 licensed therapists.
Get matched with your perfect therapist who can put you on the path to a happier life. For a special offer for all of our listeners, visit Talkspace.com/WOT.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Do you remember last week, during the intro, we talked about our long-lost Uber driver, King Larry. We had said that King Larry had come back into our lives via an awesome listener, Fantastic Cole, who had a ride with King Larry recently.
Yeah.
And she took a picture of his driver's license and sent it to us. King Larry's his first name, and we said that we want King Larry to be our regular driver. Well, King Larry, you still haven't reached out yet, but here's the opportunity. We're going to London.
So take us to the airport.
So please, King Larry, reach out to us because we need a ride. We're heading overseas for a live podcast on September 6th in London.
Yes, we are going to be at the Hoxton Square Bar and Kitchen with DJ Semtex talking to him about everything from growing up in London to, you know, interviewing Jay-Z, Kanye West, Drake, DJ Khaled.
He's got an unbelievable story. It's going to be a raucous evening. We're looking forward to seeing all you guys overseas.
If you want to see these two brothers in England, grab a bruv, grab a beer.
Jump on the tube. Come say hello to us. We're going to be in town for 3 days, I think.
Yeah, we're going to take the Lyft. We're going to take the lorry. We're going to...
Maybe King Larry's going to come with us. Who knows? September 6th, though, it's going down in East London. We're interviewing DJ Semtex. It's going to be awesome. And you can get your tickets right now. Where?
At itsthereal.com/London.
itsthereal.com/London.
This event is being brought to you guys by our good friends over at the Creative Content Agency and Project Gersh.
Jeff, today on the podcast, man, this is an epic, epic, epic episode.
Yes, we finally got DJ Green Lantern, who, you know, we have an idea of like the top three people we want on our podcast. He has for the longest time been in that top three.
We're not going to say the other ones because we don't want any of the other podcasts to, you know, steal our guests.
Well... one of them is Dan Rosenthal, our brother.
We don't want Dan to do another podcast. Dan.
If Dan does Rap Radar before this podcast.
Dan, hold off.
If Dan does Combat Jack before this podcast.
Dan, don't do it. Don't do it. Stay true.
Honestly, I wouldn't be mad if Dan did Everyday Struggle, though.
But today we have Green Lantern. If you don't know who Green Lantern is, then where the hell have you been for the last 20 years? Supremely talented mixtape DJ. Obviously, he was the touring DJ for Eminem and Jay-Z and currently with Nas, Hot 97 personality, Shade 45 personality. It's an incredible story for a guy from Rochester, New York to make it to the very top of the game.
He was commuting from Rochester down to New York City every week for 6 hours each way, and he finally made it to our podcast.
But yeah. It's been a very long drive. Shout out to Green Lantern. Shout out to his son, Tango 12, who's also a DJ who shows up at the end of the interview. Jeff, when do you want to get into it?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Brendan Byrne Arena, a.k.a. Throwback Jersey.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Happy and I Know It, a.k.a. Clap Back.
Hey, yo, what up? It's the Evil Genius, a.k.a. DJ Green Lantern. You're now rocking with It's The Real. Booyakasha.
Green, welcome to the Upper West Side.
Hey.
Nice to see you. Thanks for being here.
I'm honored to be here.
This has been something, and Jeff can attest, we've been trying to make this happen for...
Every single time you come into town, we reach out, and you're like, oh, I'm leaving in 2 hours.
I could show you guys the DMs.
All right, we're going to start off with a very sincere thing, and you know this because we've spoken about this on Instagram. We knew we made it when we first went to SOBs in 2007 when we moved to New York City and you walked up to us unprovoked and were like, what you guys are doing is great for the culture. You're doing really like forward thinking stuff and I appreciate it. Don't let up and keep going. So thank you for that.
And then you dipped.
that's my style.
Yeah, again. Yeah. And the other thing I want to say is that in preparing for the interview, we're listening to like all the rips we have from your Hot 97 stuff. We're listening to all the actual mixtape tracks that we have on our computers. And in thinking about it now, 10 years into our career, you for sure were a huge part of the way that we think, the way that you mixed your songs, the brilliance in the samples you use, in the instrumentals you pick, the humor, the vocal tracks, everything, the way you did it has a clear lineage to what we have done throughout our whole career. So thank you for that.
I appreciate that one.
Big up. Let's get into it. Where are you originally from?
I hail from upstate New York, Rochester, New York, to be specific.
Born and raised.
Born and raised.
In between Buffalo and Syracuse.
That's right.
What was it like growing up in Rochester?
Rochester is dope because it's like not a small town, but a small city.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the best of everything. You get, you know, your real high-end areas, and you get the hood, you know, so you get, if you want to, you know, taste for some real Caribbean jerk chicken, you know where to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to go get some Louis and Gucci, you know where to go. The real shit, too.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, we, my friends and I used to joke that there's a black cloud hanging over the city because literally it was always gloomy and cloudy, and it was winter like 5 months out of the year.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not a joke at all.
It's not a joke. It's not a joke at all. It really is. But I mean, obviously, you know, I got supreme love for the hometown, and but really, like towards the, I think I moved like 2002 because
mm-hmm.
I had been commuting for the last 5 years previous to that back and forth to New York City. It's a 6-hour drive.
Which is insane, by the way.
Which is insane. And I put 80,000 miles on a new truck and I destroyed it within like 2 years.
Oh, my God.
And by the end of like when I was there, you know, just like just having been moving around and seeing other places and I was like, yo, I can't take this winter all year round. This is crazy. I can't do this. And
you went the way of Eastman Kodak.
Yo, my pops worked at Kodak.
Did he really?
Yeah, you know, he was a crane operator. You know, a lot of the city is built around Kodak mm-hmm. and IBM and Xerox.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, those places. And man, there's an extreme amount of talent that's there, just like there is everywhere else. It's just like a matter of shining a flashlight on it or being blessed to make it out.
At 14, I mean, was there a chance that your first job would have been at Kodak?
I wasn't thinking about that. I was running around hollering at girls at 14 years old.
Trying to not the girls at the Kodak factory?
Not them.
No. I think that was one of the more popular Playboy issues, Women of Kodak.
Right. Yes, it was.
So what was your first job?
My first job was a paper route. I had a little paper route,
mm-hmm.
you know, me and my bike, and I would go around and I would, you know, get the little money. You know, you would be, it would be the times where you would collect. So they had these little stamps.
Yep.
You know, and you would go around to people that owed mad money and you would just like
break their legs.
Yeah.
You know, so I was persuasive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was getting that money.
What did that money go towards?
Oh, man. I really was into, this was early. I was probably 13, 14, but I was into like BMX bikes.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like, you know, go and, we would get the bike however we could.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we would go and, you know, buy the pegs, buy the mags, buy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does
that mean you were doing tricks on the bikes?
I was trying. I you know, I know my ride was sweet.
But it all went back into your business because then you were a paperboy, and so...
I mean, that was my vehicle.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
So, you know, I could have effectively written it off.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. What was your first car?
My first car was a beater. It was a probably like a 1979 Monte Carlo that I got for like $200. I was 17, and that was just a different time, bro.
Did you have it?
Different time.
Did you have any type of stereo in there?
Yes, those were the days when you could have it was right in the beginning of the pull out stereo where
mm-hmm.
you could pull a joint out.
So someone else wouldn't pull it out. Like,
right,
yeah.
Right, right. So you could pull it out and you know, so you wouldn't get robbed,
yeah.
Wouldn't get stolen. So I had one of those and I didn't have like the banging speakers or, you know, Benzy box or anything like that. But I was all right. I mean, I knew it was the beginning.
What were you listening to in that car?
It was Big Daddy Kane heavy, you know, you're talking like 87, 88, 89. Mm-hmm. So I was super heavy Marley Marl, Bomb Squad.
Yeah.
I wanted to make those beats.
Oh, right? My God.
So I super loved everything. Juice Crew, Kane, Biz, obviously G-Rap, all of that Marley era. And I went crazy for P.E. when it came out. And sonically, I was like, I want to do this.
What'd you think when Ice Cube worked with them?
It was like, wow, they could do that? You know what I mean? Like, you could do that with him?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, they're allowed to do that? You know? He's from over there, you know? But no, that was just another layer, because it was like a graduation for them, because they came from making Nation of Millions and making Terror Dome, and then they went, you know, and got it in with him, and, you know, then Sir Jinx got involved, and he added his layer to it, you know, with a little bit of West Coast in it, and... Nah, it was sonically, that was a different era. That was like the era of pioneering.
Yeah.
As opposed to, not to sound like the old guy, as opposed to an era like, say, now,
mm-hmm.
where people are, you know, just comfortable with, okay, this is the kicks, these are the snares, these are, no one's like, those guys were like, how do you do this? Let's try this. Let's try that.
Okay, you're listening to those guys. What is the impetus behind... getting those
I'm
records.
I'm not impotent.
What was
so
the,
you know.
What
well,
was
we
the,
are sponsored by Cialis.
What was the genesis of your putting two of the same record next to each other and starting to play out live?
Man, I tell this story all the time. Like, I fell into DJing. I was not... Normally, you'll see a DJ that becomes a producer afterwards and mm-hmm. starts as a DJ. I started as a beat maker.
Well, you started as a paper boy.
I started as a paper boy.
Yeah, it feels like you're rewriting
then,
history.
Right, and then I morphed into a beat maker. Mm-hmm. Right? So I was just amazed at all these sounds. So I had a bunch of friends of mine that were DJs, but I was the kid that made beats. It was like me and two other guys in the whole city of Rochester that had some sort of beat machine that could make beats for people.
And yours right? was?
Yeah, what'd you have?
And I... Here's another story. I went to, which was called House of Guitars, which was a big music store in Rochester. And I went there with the intention of buying an SP-1200 because mm-hmm. I did my little research. Okay, that's what they're using. Okay, cool. Went there and the guy was like, cool, yeah, we got it. You could buy it, but this just came in. And it was Casio's only pro-level sampler that they ever made. They made a line of it and was called the FZ1, which was like an ASR-10,
mm-hmm.
which was a sampling keyboard, right? But ASR-10, you could sequence on it, but this you couldn't, right? But he's telling me all the specs that went that were different from the SP-1200 to this, and it was like more sample time, clearer sound, you could edit the wave, all these things you couldn't do on this machine over here.
Was the salesman Just Blaze?
Yes, he was. Come to think of it. Damn, Justin. So anyway, I ended up being the only person on earth that ever got this damn keyboard, sampling keyboard. I had to go buy a little piece of junk Apple computer with Performer. This is before Digital Performer. This is 1989.
Yeah.
To sequence it, which means, you know, to line up your kicks and snares and samples and all that jazz. So anyway, I'm making my beats, and then I was taking classes at Brockport State, SUNY Brockport, which is in between Rochester and Buffalo. And I was in the radio station there, just hanging out, whatever, shooting the breeze, and talking to a friend of mine. And I'm, you know, back in the day, in the cassette tape era, if you was a beat maker, you walked around with your beat tape, right? And you would play your beat tape for people. And so I'm playing my beat tape for one of the homies, you know, in the you know, little college radio station. They got the little system. All right, yo, listen to my beats. And he was like, you know, you could do parties with the, you know, with the equipment that you use to make this. And I was like, nah, you can't, man. It's a sampler. I only got one turntable to sample from and a mixer. I don't got no sample records. I got old jazz. I mean, I got no party records. I got old jazz records to sample from.
Yep.
Like, I wasn't a DJ, you know. I wasn't trying to be one. But I hung out with three or four of my best friends were DJs. So I used to go to the parties, which were like on college campuses, with them every Friday and Saturday. Hmm. Every Friday, just like literally helping them carry crates and, you know, hang out. And so I didn't realize that I knew how to select, right? So anyway, back to the story about him. He goes, so I'm telling him, nah, we can't do this. I can't do that.
Yeah.
He goes, the Q's, which is the Q Dog, the fraternity, the Q's have a party on Friday. But this is my, first of all, shout out Steve Roberts. This is my guy who told me this, and I've told him this story. The Q's got a party on Friday. They got $500. The DJ backed out. And now thinking back to this, this is like a movie. Because who are they to, who am I? I'm not a DJ. How did I get this gig, right? Like, why did they agree to me,
right?
So he's like, yo, I can get you this gig.
He said, bring your jazz records. Let's set this party off right.
I literally sat down. I thought, like, you know what? I could borrow a crate from him, a crate from him, a crate from him. I could get the other turntable. I already had a 1200 to sample from. I had the mixer because you had to run us through that. And I'm like, yo, I'll do it. And I literally was like, and I got the gig, and I went there, and I rented some little speakers, and I got the crate from, a hip-hop crate from him, a reggae crate from him, an old-school crate from him, and an R&B crate from him. You know, these are the homies.
Yeah.
And a turntable from one of the guys. So I didn't talk on the mic the whole night. They wanted to talk, and they had to use my headphones to talk, right? But I didn't realize I knew how to at least select. I wasn't nice, you know, with the handwork, because you have to, you develop that, right? But I was in the crib, like, kind of messing around, not thinking, just messing around. So I knew how to technically bring a record in, and more than all that, not to sound long-winded with this story, but this is my life happened after this. I knew how to select. I knew what song came after the, should come after this song, and when to drop the music out in the crowd to say that, and then bam, put the next song in and get the screams.
Oh my God.
That became, I did that first night, and I straight up and down, I say this with the most humblest, I became the man on that campus.
Yo, you were Lou Gehrig, and like, well, Lou Gehrig met like a terrible end. I hope not.
Hopefully, I don't have the disease.
I'm saying you had a hell of a streak after the other guy got injured.
That seems straight.
And part of that though was because I caught a window, right? Because this was a college town, so you had to for a DJ to service them, they had to kind of like be on campus or whatever. And I caught a window when there was really nobody there.
Man.
So I got all of the business from all of the frats and the sororities, all of the alphas, kappas, zetas, AKAs, everybody.
You're the
right?
man in Brockport.
Instantly.
Are you...
Fridays...
By the way, so, could you imagine 2017 when literally there are, everybody is a DJ?
Yo, it was so crazy because there was more DJs than producers, but there were still only like five or six. They were like working and had records and had turntables and could get the sound for. That was a big ass room we used to play in.
Did you move up in, you know, east and west on 90?
Eventually,
yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
So I started in Brockport, and what would happen is you got these frats and sororities that have chapters in Buffalo and Rochester and Syracuse, and they're all coming to Brockport chapter parties. So they're like, yo, who is he?
Yeah.
Can you come to Buffalo?
Wait, what was your name?
DJ Green Lantern. But
already.
No, but hold on. Let me rewind that.
Yeah.
I started out, my name is James. I started out as James One. I didn't have a name. I was like, okay, James One. That's what I was making beats. And so right before I was DJing, I was like looking at a 12-inch record, and I was like, you know what? I want a real flavorful name, something that if someone didn't know what the song was, they picked up the 12-inch and they looked at who produced it, they'll go, damn, this beat's got to be crazy. So I just started thinking back to my childhood and what I really loved, and the Green Lantern just came in, like, not even so much from the comic books, but more so the cartoon. And I was like, holy shit, that's a crazy ass name, yeah. Right? So we're in the era, this is 1992 now. We're in the era of the Mad Hatters and the this and the that, and you know what I'm saying, right? The Bush Babies, right?
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
This era, right? So I'm like, okay, bet. It don't really translate well to DJ Green Lantern, right? So when they put the flyer together, it would be like, sounds by, okay, what's your name? Green Lantern. They're like, huh? So they're used to DJ Big Mike,
right,
DJ
yeah.
whatever, right?
Yeah.
So it just became like this weird thing, and then I was like, okay, well, I guess it's a conversation piece, right? But it was just a blessing to be able to just come in, go full steam at that. And but what it did was, I was so full steam, it kind of put my beat making kind of on the back burner.
Mm-hmm.
But I had had a solid 3-4 years of digging and getting my technique down, and I was making real ass beats.
Yeah. What were your parents listening to, like, when you were growing up? Like,
everything. My brother, 4 years older than me, controlled the radio pretty much. So
was he Jewish?
He might be. Wore a little hat. I don't know if that was. So now I realize that I have this this wealth of, that's what I call it, subconscious knowledge of classic rock that he used to listen to, Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, and all of these things. And I would listen for the breakdowns in it, like the little funky part of Whole Lot of Love, and you know what I mean, ooh, what's this, right? I was thinking about this the other day. The first ever cassette, the first ever thing that I got that was a piece of music was my older cousin Tammy, for some Christmas. I might have been 8 years old or whatever. She got me the cassette of Another One Bites the Dust.
Oh, my God.
Because it was funky to me. It was like, boom, boom, boom. It was like, oh, what's this? Right? It was like when you first heard The Message. When I first heard Broken Glass everywhere, people pissing on stuff, you know, that just, I was like, oh, my God, what is this?
So you had this musical basis, though.
I have this, like, wide variety, right? I'm a Run DMC kid. I'm loving this, you know, I was a break dancer. I used to walk around my neighborhood with the cardboard that we used to carry and a vest, so you could, when you did your backspin as a break dancer, it was, you slide, there was less friction with a vest on, like a shiny vest, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like polyester or whatever.
And were you doing this for fun or were you battling?
No, I was not battling. Okay. I was not battling, but we are in the era of, you know, Fat Laces and Pumas and Adidas, and we used to have Taps. I'm an old guy, you know what I mean? But we used to have spikes in the Pumas on the side and Taps on the bottom of them. And so anyway, so I have this crazy mix of a musical knowledge, right? So fast forward, I'm DJing with this base of being a wannabe producer who was making beats. I called myself a producer, but I know the difference now, right? And then the mixtape came. The bug to make the mixtapes came about 5 years after I started DJing live. So I was like, wait a minute, I can do this and I can do that. So I started looking at it like I was producing a whole tape. So that's where you get the, this journalist told me one time, she was like, you have a lot of continuity in your mixes. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. Like, what is continuity? She's like, you take one thing that says something and another thing that says the same thing and you put them together. I was like, oh yeah, I do that.
Yeah.
That's about there.
You got it right. Yeah.
Right. But I gotta shout out my boy Big Reg, who's a DJ I came up with in Rochester. Me and him used to talk about all the time, like, yo, what if you took this, they said this, and then you put it with that, and you say that, you know, and then this says that.
Yeah.
That was just hip hop, though. That wasn't like people, you know, are amazed by it. Like, we weren't amazed by it. That was like what you're supposed, that was like the base.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
So you invented genius.com.
Exactly. I need a check.
He is the evil genius. So, yeah.
There you go.
You know Rochester, and you know Syracuse, and you know Buffalo, and you know, Central and Western New York.
Lackawanna.
Do you know what's outside of
I know
that
what,
area?
I know what I see on TV.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I know what I hear on tapes that are being brought back from people that lived in New York City and would tape Flex on the radio. And they would tape Stretch and Bob on the radio. And I would listen to it like everybody else, like awe-inspired. Like, oh, my God, what is this, right? And I'm hearing Pete Rock and Marley mix. I'm hearing Clark Kent mix. I'm hearing Flex mix. Now this is 95.
By the way, this is our brother Dan.
What's up, Dan? Dan, do they keep you in a closet or something? Because we never see you, Dan.
Dan's got a real job.
That's why.
Dan wears, like,
Dan's,
you know,
the
suits.
One who's paying for this place. Dan's the one whose name is on this lease. He's the one they ran the credit check on.
Dan has not denied any of that. Yeah.
For the record, I'm right.
Actually,
okay?
You're not on the lease.
Yeah, no, Dan is not.
Dan's the only one that's not on the lease.
Dan's always like, I'm going to get out of here. Like, yeah. You're getting all this stuff from New York. Also, you're not far from Canada.
Exactly. And I'm going to Toronto at a certain point. I started going. One of my secret weapons when I became a mixtape DJ, I started making tapes, was I will go to these two record stores, Tracks and Play the Record, that are big record stores in Toronto on Yonge Street. Every Thursday, they would have a shipment that came in, and they would get white labels. This is now 1997, 1998, 99. So they would get these bootleg white labels that I feel like never went anywhere else, because I'm going to the mixtape store and I'm looking to see, like, after I bought this white label, this song, this new Mace song that I've never heard before, and the new Clue tape come out next week and they don't have it on it.
Something's
what's going on here, right? So we start figuring out maybe the A&Rs are selling it to the bootleggers in Toronto to make a little quick cash, or won't come back to them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
like, I found, maybe I should stop asking questions.
Right, no. So I went full speed ahead, like, oh, I found a gold mine, yeah. Right? So I would literally get exclusives and didn't have to be, you know, stealing dats from A&Rs and, and you know the mixtape DJ story, right?
Yeah.
So I'm coming up in the era of, I love the creative mixtape DJs, right? Ron G, Chill Will, right. Those guys.
The blend guys,
but it was the Clue era. Mm-hmm. So all the eyeballs were on the guys that had the new shit that you never heard before. So I'm like, I'm going to blend these two together whenever I can.
Yeah.
Right? I'm going to do some creative stuff with the exclusives, you know, and a lot of times I would do things like, because at this point I leveled up sampler wise. Casio's still there,
yeah.
But I got an ASR X, which is in Sonic's version of the MPC at that point. It was mm-hmm. like a little sampling drum machine. If you put in mono, it had a hella sample time.
Yeah.
So I would get, like, say, an exclusive on cassette or a DAT from somebody. And then I would sample it, the whole song, and then keep, you know how, like, as a DJ you'll bring back the snare right before the verse,
yep.
that type of thing.
Yeah.
So right before, like, say Shine would start his rap, I would cut it and it would sound like I'm DJing it, but I'm bringing it back with the sampler. And then on another track, because now I'm on a four track, I'm finding a sound that sounds exactly like, say, the snare or word. And then I would get calls from people like Clark Kent and like Jacob York would call my phone, like, yo, how did you get the vinyl for this song? And I'm like, don't worry about it.
Meanwhile, you rebuilt it yourself.
Exactly. You know, but that was just me doing what I thought you did as somebody who was in hip hop and was innovating and manipulating things. Like, that's what you were supposed to do.
I just feel like you just sunned a bunch of people.
Well, yeah.
That's what you're supposed to do.
You're right. No. Yeah. Shout out to all the kids who go on SoundCloud and, like, loop up something extremely easily, you know, in 2017. Meanwhile, you were like,
there was nothing easy about it.
Right.
At all. Nothing easy about it. And that's not to, like, pat myself on the back or whatever.
But that's real. That was your tool.
But it was also like what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I love the new Biggie song just like everybody else. But I wanted to I wanted people to say, oh, shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, damn, did you hear what he did?
Yeah, you listened to that new James 1 tape? Like,
you know, so now we're in the mixtape age. We're now like 97, 98.
Still cassettes at this point?
Of course. Oh, yeah. We didn't go to CDs yet.
Right.
No. We're not there yet.
So where do you get the actual tapes from that you then dub?
You start out buying some bulk regular cassettes, you know, 10 at a time, maybe, whatever. So, and as you start selling more, you find out, okay, where do they sell this wholesale at, right? So there was a guy who duplicated cassettes. It was Frank something, I forget the name, but it was like right around the corner from the studio that I used to go to, and he had a duplication service where he would sell you the blank cassettes. He would put a sticker on, type your name on it, make it look real official, and duplicate it for you on his big rack of, you know, like 100 cassettes, and do it in one day, and, you know, charge you X amount of dollars for it. So as I leveled up, I started going to him. Then I bought a Telex, which was the 3-to-1. You would have to have the master in one, mm-hmm. and then it would do 3 at a time. My son, who's here with me now, can attest to putting those cassettes in the you know, putting the covers together, the tapes, all of that. That was literally, that's what you had to do, you know.
And how'd you sell them? How'd you distribute them?
So you would just go, first of all, you know, obviously
get
I start
on your bike and just right? throwing them in houses.
So you first, you know, you start where you live. Yeah. You know, so there was a couple mixtape spots. There was a lot of them, actually, but there was a couple that messed with me because they knew me from being a DJ. Mm-hmm. So I was years in as being a DJ, and I knew these guys. So I came in one day like, yo, here's my tape. You know, so it's consignment, right? So I don't know what it was, but because they knew me, they were playing in the store, and people were like, yo, what's that? And so they're looking at the track list and like, yo, what's this? I never heard this Mace song. What's this Cam song? So they're buying it for the new stuff, but then they're like, damn, did you hear what he did in the middle of that and put that old thing in it and that interview and that movie piece? And then it became, yo, the tape sold out, so we need more. So boom. So then it goes from there to, okay, now I'm going to reach out to Buffalo. I'm going to go to Syracuse. I'm going to search this thing out. And
you kept Frank busy.
I did. And, you know, then I started. Frank got pissed at me because I didn't want him to dupe the tapes anymore. I just wanted to buy the bulk, you know, blank cassettes and get him to do the stickers for me. He's like, nah, I don't work like that. We're a service. Can't just come in here and buy the cassettes. We're going to dupe them for you. And that's how we make our money. So Frank had to go. Okay? Frank sleeps with the fishes. Yeah, yeah. Okay. but you know what? I want to pause there real quick. And I want to rewind. When you said earlier, you said I started out in Rochester and did, you know, that I knew about Buffalo. I knew about surrounding areas, Syracuse and all that. And what did I know about elsewhere?
Mm-hmm.
And I did know about New York City via, obviously, videos and these cassettes. And one time, because I was working at, I had a radio show at Rochester Institute of Technology, RIT. The radio station was 89.7 WITR, and they would allow you to be a community member, which is you didn't have to go to school there to be have a radio show.
That's awesome.
They were right.
Good for you because you didn't go to school there.
Exactly, right? So my boy went to school there, and he literally gave me his radio show. He was going out. He was from Long Island, and he was like a super senior, and he was like, yo, I got to go. So I want to give this to somebody here. Take it. And I was just a fledgling DJ at that point. I did a few parties, and I was like, bet, this is all me. A couple years into doing that, I convinced them. Actually, it was the second year because it was 1993. They were sending people to New York City. They were going to send two people to go to the New Music Seminar with a cassette recorder to get interviews and drops for the radio station. So I said, yo, I need to go. I need to. This is the seminar, right?
Yeah.
This New Music Seminar, which is what we always heard about. This is where all the rappers got together. This is where hip-hop, you know, commences, where it lived. That's where, you know, the DJ battle was. This is where the MC battle was. And so this happened to be the year. So they sent me and this other guy, and they had a little portable, it was a portable DAT or cassette. I forget. But anyway, highlight of the trip. And I put this on Twitter last week because Crooked Eye said, yo, name your hip hop highlight of your life. And this to me, like, I've been on a stage with 100,000 people in front of me. I did a bunch of shit, right?
Yeah.
But this little thing right here was like amazing. I keep this story with me forever. So at the end of the MC battle, which was at that point, they suspended because there was a fight. The whole lynch mob got jumped by, you know, if you watch the NWA movie, mm-hmm. the year before. So it was a big brawl. And so the New Music Seminar stopped the MC battle. So Clark Kent picked it up and called it the Superman MC battle. So he organized it. And by that next year, he was doing it. So it was his function. So I went there and I literally taped recorded the whole thing, and I would play it on the radio when I came back. So as I'm there, this is the year that, I don't know if you guys remember this, but it came down to Supernatural and Mad Skills.
Oh my God.
And it was a tie. And Clark, you know this. You know what you did. After just like a couple of minutes of deliberation, he was like, I'm giving it to Supernat. He won. And it was like, okay. It was no tiebreaker, nothing. Right, it was like, right, whatever, right?
I mean, he's Superman, so he gets to decide. It's his thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So we're all outside. You know, it's at the Sheraton on 7th Ave. I remember this like it was yesterday. We were outside after the event, and I'm just this little, you know, I'm a DJ from up. No one knows me. I'm standing outside. Wow, that's Clark Kent right there. That's Stretch Armstrong right there. Whoa, and I look, and I'm like, that's Jay-Z next to Clark, because mind you, this is 1993. We're past Hawaiian Sophie jazz era. Now we're in the Can I Get Open, you know, fast rapping Jay.
Yeah.
You know, as the guest MC from, you know what I mean, with them, which was Clark's crew anyway, right? So anyway,
but he's still not like a, he's not like a, he's big, not, deal,
no,
yet.
No, 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 no. Yeah. He didn't even put out the solo stuff. He didn't even know In My Lifetime yet. Yeah. None of that, right? This is 93.
Yeah.
Standing on the sidewalk, there's about probably 50 people outside, just off having their own conversations. I see Mad Skills over there, like, you know, talking to somebody, whatever. And he, when I said this story, I added him, and he was like, facts. That was really happening. So watch this. Clark Kent in 1993 was the man. I mean, it was his function at that point. He was on the radio all the time. He was the man. He was A&R, Atlantic Records, super producer Clark Kent. Some kid, random, off the street, walked up to him and wanted to rap for him. And, you know, Clark Kent, he goes, because I was about to describe, but I want to be respectful. I don't want to sound like I'm shitting on him at all. He has a unique personality.
He does.
I will say that. Yeah. Right? He's very confident of himself.
I'll say that.
And Clark, you know that's true.
Shouts to Clark Kent.
Shout to Clark Kent.
So confident.
So he's standing there with you know, Jay-Z's next to him, as are a bunch of other people, right? So he goes to the kid. He was like, listen to you rap. You got to battle my man right here before I'll listen to you. We call him Jesus Christ. These are his words. I'll never forget this.
Yeah.
They used to call DJ Scratch Jesus Christ of the turntables. Yep. And Clark called Jay-Z Jesus Christ. Right? He was like, yo, we call him Jesus Christ. You got to battle him before you can rap for me. So then it kind of gets everybody's attention. So we just stop our little convos and we're watching now. And the kid goes first. He says some regular rhymes. And then Jay is still fast rapping Jay.
Yep.
And he said some like something real fast and then stopped. And he was like, I thought so. And everybody was like, oh! It was the beginning of the super hot fire moment.
Oh,
everybody
God.
Was like, oh! And they cooked him in that moment. And the kid just got mad. And he walked away. And he went on to obviously become Hove. When I look back on it, that moment is so much more important now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Did you tell Jay later?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And I've told Clark 17 times already. Yeah. And they both were like, wow, you was there.
You should tell them that you were the guy who battled Jay.
No. But no, that's like something I keep near and dear to me, like, because that was just impromptu. It was on the sidewalk. It was very hip hop.
That's so hip hop.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's incredible. Then you go back up to Rochester, though.
I go back up to Rochester.
Well, first of all, did you have any drops?
I had a gang of drops.
From?
I had a flex drop.
Oh, that's cool.
I had, I think I got Apache, rest in peace.
Wow.
Man. I had a bunch of drops.
And you went back up to Rochester and back got on the reamed out there.
Because I forgot they said to bring the receipts for the money I spent, because they gave me like a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah.
And I didn't get any receipts and I got reamed out. And I remember that.
We just wanted to interrupt this podcast to tell you about our friends over at Talkspace.com.
We all need to take a little bit better care of ourselves, and our mental health is no exception, especially at a time when every week seems like a month and every month feels like a year. But there are options out there to get your days going the way they should be. Go to Talkspace.com, the online therapy company, where it's easy to connect with an experienced, licensed therapist that you pick based on your preferences for as little as $32 a week.
Listen, if you're waking up every morning just terrified of what's going to happen in the news, what has happened overnight while you were, you know, catching a few hours of sleep. I was listening to the Rocky Marciano podcast from last week, and I couldn't believe that that was 1 week ago. I couldn't believe what has happened in the news in the last 7 days. We're remarking on it with Brocky, and we're like, this is so crazy. It gets so much crazier. It makes you want to talk to someone. And look, guys, you can't just talk to anybody. Talk to a professional, and don't just go to any professional. These guys at Talkspace.com have made it so affordable for you guys, as little as $32 a week. You can send your therapist texts, audio, and video messages. You can even do a live video chat.
And by the way, it doesn't only have to be about the world at large, and doesn't have to be only about the White House. You can talk about, you know, your relationships. Maybe your relationship is not going the way you think it should.
Or maybe it is. I don't know. If whatever you want to talk about to a professional, these are them. Go to Talkspace.com/WOT with this special offer code, COUPON, COUPON, and you get $30 off your first month. Show your support for this podcast, A Waste of Time with It's the Real, by typing in COUPON, COUPON, at Talkspace.com/WOT.
And if you're not going to do it for yourself, then do it for us.
Yes.
That would be our therapy.
Yes. Do that, Talkspace.com/WOT. And now, back to the evil genius, DJ Green Lantern. So you're back on the box up in Rochester,
yes.
And is that just where you're going to stay for the rest of your life? Are you like, I'm here, and this is my town, and that's it?
Hell to the no. I'm so inspired at this point, because mind you, it's 93. I'm starting to DJ now. I'm doing the college parties. I'm still in my mind, I'm a beat maker.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a producer.
You got that ASR.
I was so into it, right? Then it becomes, you know, so that's 93, and then fast forward, I started making mixtapes like 97, got really good at it, and then started winning the mixtape awards. That's where I got my like recognition. I started, you know, doing that, and at the same time, the tapes were branching out. Right, so I had homies in New York that I was sending. Shout to Big J. He lived in New York City. I would send him like hundreds of tapes, and he was walking the dogs for me. He was going to these record labels and dropping tapes off here and there, and like, yo, listen to that, you know. And then it became okay, all right.
At what point do other DJs start paying attention to you?
When I started winning the mixtape awards. Rest in peace, Justo. He recognized, you know, Justo was also, he started as a promo guy. So I knew him from being at college radio. He was calling me to promote records for Epic Records and other labels he was working with. So I'm sending him, obviously, oh, here's a tape. And he's like, yo, this shit is crazy.
Yeah.
You know? So he's like, yo, I put your ballots in these mixtape stores and you won. So get your ass down here and you got a plaque for the awards. So then when I popped up as like most creative mixtape DJ, all the other guys were like, who is he? You know?
Yeah.
Because this is like really early into my, you know, presence into the scene that was already taken up by guys like Clue, Craig, SNS, all of these guys, right? So, but I had my little niche, you know.
Totally.
I was doing the creative stuff with exclusives with it too.
Who's sending you exclusives?
Or was it just Mace? From Toronto?
No, I really was getting them primarily from this little gold mine that I had in Toronto, like white label wise. And then as I got a little bit bigger, I had this guy over here, this guy over there. They would like send me a cassette version of this, and he would like hurry up and dub it.
I like that it's 20 years later and you still won't give up your sources.
Ah, man, come on, man. Your hood rules apply. You know? So the one thing I never did, I thought was corny, was like paying somebody hundreds of dollars for it. It wasn't that serious to me, because I would be like, nah, I'd rather do I'll do a mix with an acapella before I do that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If I get it, cool. And I was driving up there by this time I had, you know, got a car and everything, and I was just like 2.5 hours to get
you
there.
You had a car.
No, but a real car that could make it, you know. And I'm driving up there every Thursday, and I'm getting my little records and, like, you know, putting it out, and everybody's like, yo, where'd you get that song? Yeah. Where'd you get these songs? Now the tapes are selling in, like, VA, and, you know, this is literally the era of organic.
And does that get you, like, live gigs
out of
state?
Of course, yes, yes. First place was Hartford, Connecticut. Shout out to Hartford, Connecticut. There was a mixtape capital. They loved mixtape DJs so much in Hartford, they would book everybody. That was the first place that booked me, and they started being consistent. So I would drive, I'm living in Rochester, I would drive 7 hours to Hartford, Connecticut, and go pick up $600, $700.
What do you listen to in the car while you're making those drives?
Or is it just your drops over and over and over?
So I'm listening to, man, I got 7 hours. So it was like, you know, a couple mixtapes, new Hove album, Nas album, bootleg this, bootleg that, whatever it is. Just
yeah.
Whole lot of everything.
But not like sports talk radio. Not like NPR. Like, just to, like, get music out of your...
I don't even know what NPR means. How about that?
What's your introduction to Hot 97? Who finds out about you? Who makes that first phone call?
So this is the era of Sean Taylor. Shout out to Sean Taylor being the music director. So, Sean Taylor, music director, Tracy Clougherty is a program director,
mm-hmm.
aka the Ice Queen.
Yeah, yeah.
She would not play.
Yeah.
And she kind of embraced that term, the Ice Queen. Right?
Totally.
They want to spice things up there. DJ Enough, who I knew from, he kind of worked the label side too. He was like A&R for Def Jam.
Yep.
And, when I started doing, like, I started doing these intros for Cornerstone Promotions. Mm-hmm. Shout out to CL, Corey,
yeah.
Llewellyn CL, Rob Stone, you know, the whole early Big Ro, the whole Cornerstone crew. That's how I got on the radar of DJ Enough. And he got me to do the intro for this Def Jam sampler tape. So at this one point, a couple years after that, when I started, you know, banging them with the tapes and the awards and everything, they were putting together a Saturday night rotation, midnight to four, every Saturday, called Ticket to the Streets.
Yeah.
So they had a bunch of names, and they were like, all right, let's get this one, this one, this one, this one. And Enough put my name in there and was like, yo, you gotta get Green Lantern. And a couple other people was familiar. They're up there, like, shout to Reggie Hawkins.
Mm-hmm.
Who was assistant PD at the time, who went on to be, you know, serious.
Mm-hmm.
He was always, you know, cheerleading for me from day zero. And that's how I got that slot, which was, you know, in that rotation, which was Camillo, me, K Slay, and
Who Kid.
Absolute. Matter of fact, well, first of all, DJ Threat, RIP, mm-hmm. was in there originally. And I want to say after... No, Who Kid? Matter of fact, no. Who Kid wasn't in that one. He got his own Monday night slot when G-Unit became, you know, big.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They gave him a Monday night thing. So Abso or Envy, one of the two. No, I think Envy might have been in the beginning. And then after Threat died, I think they brought in Abso, I believe. That's how it went.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I think Envy was in the first rotation. Either way,
yeah.
It was a Saturday night. We all had once a month, you know, and I would drive down and do my midnight to four.
Live. Oh, my
crash God. At a homie's house and drive back or whatever,
yeah.
You know. And
what was that first night like?
It was amazing. It was. You know what it was, though? I had already done my first one was like a Labor Day weekend during the day Mixmaster weekend.
Yeah.
So that one was... This was... Okay, so you hear now you hear the radio and you hear everyone with their drops and you just press a button and it's just there.
Right.
There wasn't none of that before. There wasn't any drop in the little machine. It wasn't all digital. Nobody did that. So I brought my ASRX and I had a bunch of discs and it had all my drops on it. Green Lantern, the evil genius, right?
Yeah.
And so I brought all these discs and I brought this sampler with me and I brought a CDJ because that had just came out.
Mm-hmm.
So I had some exclusives on the CDJ and everyone who was there was looking at me like, what the hell are you doing? You're underneath the mixer plugging shit in. What are you doing? Right? So I taped it. I recorded it and I put it out as a cassette, as a mixtape. And it's probably bootlegged out there now. It rang off for years.
Amazing.
And it was DJ Green Lantern, Labor Day, take Mixmaster, whatever it was.
Did you save everything for that? Like, were you just like, yo, I'm going to like...
I made routines. I did all type of things because, yo, we grew up listening to Mixmaster's Weekend and like, damn, who's going to be on? You know, oh, Clark Kent's going to be on, and you coveted, you wanted that. Like, that was a dream to be a DJ on Mixmaster Weekend.
And you did it.
And I did it, man. And, you know, it was a blessing. And, you know, shout out to everybody that, you know, was like I said, you know, enough and everybody that was played a part in letting me do that. And that was just more inspiration to just keep going, keep going, keep going.
So the next step, I'm guessing, if my timeline's right, is that Eminem comes calling?
No, not yet. They gave me the Sunday night slot, which at first was the Pitbull radio. It was 1 hour. I think it was like 1 to 2 or 11 to 12, one of
Big
those.
Big Dog Pitbull. Big Dog Pitbull. Not Pitbull, yeah.
Not Pitbull the rapper. The international star, yeah, Pitbull. Yeah, yeah. No.
Mr. Worldwide. That would be amazing.
Right. But this was...
Into reggae right after.
Right. This was Rest in Peace, Big Cap, and Cypher Sounds. And because it was Flex's crew.
So they got
1 hour on Sunday night. And somebody in the industry was like... Man, it's a buried slot. No one's listening to that. I was like, man. So anyway, I got that slot. They gave me that slot after them. Yeah. They was like, Syph don't want to do it, whatever, right? So I was like, bet. So I had that slot for a minute. And then, whatever happened to where there was a space and there was a need for a DJ in Eminem camp. So... Paul Rosenberg had heard all of the Cornerstone tapes. He was listening to the mixtapes, and he was like, yo, this guy's kind of creative. Maybe you and him can put a ill show together, right? So we met, clicked, boom. Now we're doing shows.
Actually, like, first meeting Eminem.
You know what's odd? I was thinking about that today.
No.
Right. I've never met him. In preparation for this interview, I thought back to the first day I met him. And, I feel like I might have dissed him on the low without realizing it because I had listened to, they had brought me in the studio. He was in L.A., was at the one of Dre's studios, and they were mixing or finishing recording the Eminem show. So I heard a few things in that session. I was like waiting to meet him. They had finalized that it was going to be me because there was a couple other people whose name was in the hat, and they're like, okay, cool. Now you got to go meet him and see if he likes you, or if he says this guy's a dick. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure. Which you are, by the way.
Which I am. You know,
if people haven't guessed that, by the way.
So I hear cleaning out my closet. And I'm like, okay, instrumentation-wise, it sounded slightly similar to me to Renegade. Mm-hmm. With like, you know, I'm in my producer head, right? Oh, side stick snare, upright bass, you know. So when we finally meet, which is later on that night, he's like, yo, you got to hear some of the album? And I was like, yeah, I really like that one that sounds like Renegade. And he looked at me like with this, like almost like a scowl, like why are you saying my, you know what I'm saying? Why are you saying this sounds like this other thing? Like I felt like, okay, I was like a shot,
right?
You know what I mean? And then I was like, no, it's great though, it's great. But that was that was on the balcony. So hip hop and rock and roll, at the same time. It was on the balcony of the Chateau Marmont. So very Doors, Jim Morrison.
Yeah, yeah.
Of that moment.
Also, Lana Del Rey
and Entourage.
Yeah, sure.
Shout out to Scott Venner.
By the way, shout out to Scott Venner. I thought you were gonna say like it was the same balcony that
Suge held.
Wasn't that the same balcony? Let's make it that balcony.
Yeah, sure.
Whatever. So, this podcast is all lies anyway. Who cares?
I never had a paper out. Yeah. That's not my son.
What was the first artist who really reached out to do a mixtape that gave you full creative control and was like, I want like Green Lantern at his best?
The evil genius.
That scenario probably was, it came later, like years after, years after that point, it came from Beanie Siegel.
Okay. One of my favorites, by the way. Public Enemy number one.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Like, that project is so inspired, I think, by both of you guys. What was your experience with that?
So, at that point, I had done... I had made a mark on the big side. Like, I had done my tapes before that, which were normal mixtape DJ compilations of, you know, this guy's song and that guy's song, and I was doing my little creative stuff with it, the intros and all of that. And then I had done both Shady projects, which were monsters, you know, the Invasion series.
Oh, man.
And I had done the Jadakiss Champ is Here. And then it was, because both of those didn't start out with here, Green, you know, you have to show and prove, right? So by the time the Kiss joint was done and in the streets and it was a monster, then it was somebody from the label. I think it might have been Big Face Gary.
Wow.
Who said, yo, Beans wanted to do the tape with you. It was going to be somebody else, but he wants to do that tape with you because he heard Kiss tape.
Wow.
So that was the first one who was like, I see what this guy can do. Let me just give him the music and trust him and listen to his ideas. And maybe you should, of my ideas, like you should rap over this and do that and do that.
Was he well aware of every instrumental you brought to him?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, this is hip hop.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
So, you know, but he had his own thing. Like, honestly, that's the one tape that had too much material. There was like probably four or five songs that were left off of it. It was like probably 30 songs on that tape. But he was just in beast mode so much, he just wanted to rap.
Where'd you record?
In his house in Philly. And I went out there a couple times. We drove. And both times I remember by the end of the night, it was like, these are like late night sessions. I'll get there midnight, leave out 8 a.m.
Yeah.
All of his guys would be passed out because he recorded in like a finished off basement. And he just had the Pro Tools set up with the mic stand and the engineer right there with the laptop and an M-Box. Remember those days?
Sure, so yeah.
He would have a bunch of his guys there, and they would all be passed out on the floor literally by like 5, 6 a.m. And they all had these just like conspicuous paper bags with bottles in them. I feel like that was syrup back then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Heavy.
Well, Philly was early on that, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So just amazing, you know, hip-hop memories, just doing that.
Yeah, what's it like watching him rap?
It's insane. It's Beanie Siegel.
Yeah.
You know, and it was at the height of Siegel.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, this is crazy.
Yeah.
This is like, I'm still a hip hop kid at heart. I'm still the kid amazed at Kid Capri on the cassette tape and like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But now I'm in it. And I'm like, oh, I'm contributing now. You know what I'm saying? And he's like, yo, you know, this tape going to be crazy.
Talk about that Jadakiss one, The Champ is Here.
I wasn't supposed to be on that. No one knows this. No, that tape was going to be Big Mike. Shout to Big Mike. Big Mike from Connecticut.
Yeah.
You know, made tapes and in the exclusive lane. Right, like I told you, most eyeballs were on those guys. So Kiss was getting ready to do a tape. And I don't know how I found out about it. I'm kicking it. Mike was a good friend of mine. So I think Mike might have told me. And I was like, yo, man, I want to get on that tape. And he's like, yo, holler at Kiss. So by this time, I slightly know Jadakiss from being just in the industry, you know. And he's like, you know, this is after the Shady tapes. He was like, yeah, come on, let both of y'all do it. So that's why the first Champ is Here is me and Big Mike.
Going back to the Shady tapes, because that's like when I first started hearing about you, and that's when I saw you up in Boston. What was it like to put the first one together?
Wow. There's a blend on it. I'm going to give you an example. There's a blend on it of, and this is late in the tape, of Eminem, Lose Yourself over Nas, One Mic beat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first and probably maybe only time that Eminem heard that and goes, you are an evil genius. Because I made all the, you know, the like the inflections in his voice match up with the beats or whatever. But that tape alone, obviously that was the tape of him responding to Benzino.
Right.
And there was this heightened beef element to it. But it was also me leveling up into, yo, now I'm this guy's tour DJ and he has these other artists. And I've seen me being in the mix. I've seen a couple other people do like crew tapes. So I kind of we've put some of those wheels in motion. Like, yo, we should do a mixtape. So, you know, just to highlight the label, of course. Like, you know what I mean? And then it was like, yeah. But he loves to rap too. Rappers love to rap. Mm-hmm. I love rappers that want to rap.
Yeah.
And he had a reason to rap. So that, you know, that came that with the, you know, and he was going back and forth with Benzino. So there was the Sauce and the Nail in the Coffin.
Both of those records, yeah. And this is no hyperbole, are classic records.
Yes.
Which, like, that might be like the most listened to record I've ever played. Like, yeah. Nail in the Coffin. Like, I listen to that.
Any road trip, if we're going down to see our cousins down in Washington and we're driving, like, that's absolutely there. And yeah, we'll rewind it and spit every.
It's the best.
First of all, you're getting stories here that I've never told a soul in my life. Just because it's just like everyday things. But when you look back on it, it's like, wow.
No, it's significant.
The day I heard Nail in the Coffin, we had some random show at some, like, college in Michigan somewhere, right? So it was like everybody's there. I'm the DJ, flew me in for it. I don't live in Detroit, so I don't really hang with those guys like that. But all of D12 was there, and M comes in, and so it's like me and Proof, and I think Swifty McVeigh was there, mm-hmm. And Proof had driven up from his crib to wherever this spot was in Michigan, whatever. So M was hyped because he had just finished the song, and he was like, yo, let's go in the car and drive around the parking lot and listen to the song I just made. So I jump in the car. So I think it's me, Swifty, M, and Proof, and we just sat there and listened, drove around this parking lot listening to the Sauce, which to me was my favorite over Nail in the Coffin.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Turns out you're wrong.
Obviously, I'm wrong. But just thinking back on it, becomes a real, like, wow. It becomes like a moment that you look back on and be like, wow, that was, you know, rest in peace, Proof. And,
yeah.
You know, that was
who,
like,
was driving?
I want to say it was Proof, but then again, Proof might have been, because I feel like I'm seeing him in the passenger seat. M might have said, you know, but I don't remember that.
Was Eminem in the back middle?
Definitely not. Yeah. Definitely not. But nah, man, just like, you know, moments like that, and just, there's like a million of those.
Talk about Hail Mary coming together.
Oh, my God. Hail Mary. Okay.
The Tupac version.
Yes. So Tupac didn't like Biggie. Yeah. So anyway, the first tour that which was the Anger Management tour that I was on with M, I'm a mixtape DJ. I'm trying to get the guy that I now DJ for to rap for something for my tape.
Right.
So
selfish.
Every now and then, I'm picking and choosing because it's a superstar guy now. So you don't want to make him think you're a thirsty DJ guy.
Sure. Yeah.
But every now and then, you'll be like, you know, you figure out, what is he like? Maybe he wants to rap on that. He's a big Tupac fan. So one day on a tour bus, I was like, yo, you ever think about rapping on some, maybe like Tupac beats? And his head perked up. Like, I was like, maybe this? And I had the instrumental to Hail Mary. And he goes, ooh. And 7 months later, he goes, yo, remember that Hail Mary thing? I think I got something. And it was that. And I was like, whoa, what is this?
Yeah.
You know, because that, you know, and that was obviously a sign of the times, of what they were in, the you know, the situation, this one, and it was them and them. And,
yep.
You know, so it became something more than just me wanting him to rap on Hail Mary.
Right, right.
You know.
Yeah.
But.
And then yeah. he got 50.
Yes.
On it.
Yeah.
And then. Busta just got on
after
on his own.
The shots at Violator, or
yeah.
I believe that's probably what prompted Busta to do that.
And legendary. Had you met Busta at that point?
Oh yeah. Busta, because Busta was very active on the mixtape circuit. So Busta Rhymes, I think, was the first person that I ever got to send me a freestyle to my house, because Busta at this time was like 2001, 2002. You know, he was doing freestyles and he was really active, and it was Flip Mode Squad era.
Yep.
So I remember getting that CD that was like from whatever studio they did it at, and it's like Green Lantern Freestyle, and I was like, wow, I made it. But
turns out he was sending freestyles to everybody.
Turns out, damn it. But nah, yo, shout to Bus, you know. I think he just kind of felt a way about his car getting shot.
I wanted to jump on that. Yeah.
You know.
What was the impetus behind, what was the genesis? How did you come up with The Champ Is Here?
Here's a story about The Champ Is Here song. Mr. C had a drop, or sweeper, on that he used to play all of the time in between songs, right? And it was just like bigging himself up, right? So he took the part of the Ali movie that was like, boom, 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 boom. The champ is here. Yeah. Doom, doom, doom. The champ is here. Whoosh, Mr. C on Hot 97.
Yeah.
So every time I heard that, I was like, yo, that's a beat. Somebody needs to make a song. Why doesn't somebody make a song out of this? This is what I'm saying to myself as I'm listening to this.
Did you tell Mr. C?
Yes. So about 6 months later, after listening to this and listening to this, I was like, I think I can make a song out of that. You mind if I go into the computer? Because now I'm at the station too.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, go ahead. So I get it, and I make sample the drums, or it's congas, and it's Ali's voice, or it's actually Will Smith's voice from the movie, right? So by now I'm on the fun fact. I'm on an MPC 4000. Now this is producer wise we've leveled up, right?
Yeah.
So this is 2004, because it was after Two Guns Up, which was 2003, which is another whole nother story.
Yeah, right? We'll get to that.
Champ Is Here is me. I'm getting ready to do a mixtape, and so I make a beat out of it, right? So where it's not just The Champ Is Here. So I separated the congas and made it like what would it sound as a full beat, right? Where that's just a hook, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to make this really just like almost like a blend, but like on steroids almost, right? So I took the third verse. Jadakiss' first single for his second album was called Time's Up.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
And so there was an acapella released. So I took the third verse of that acapella and put it over this beat, and he happens to start his verse and go, you know, Champ Is Here, started from crack, now two anthems a year.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that really fits, right? And it fit tempo-wise, and I was like, okay, cool. So I put it on a tape. This tape, I forget what it was. I think it was In The Lab, the one I think I had Dame Dash host.
Wow.
Right? This is just another various artist, me being a mixtape DJ, and I'm working now, right? So this is me being Green Lantern. I put things together. I get verses. I get freestyles. I get exclusives. But I also make my own creations, Frankenstein, however you may want to put it, right?
Yeah.
So Mr. C, or it might have been Monse, took it off the tape the day after it came out and start playing it on the radio.
Wow.
So I start getting blown up. Kiss is like, yo, everybody blowing me up. What is this thing you made that's on the radio? Right? And so I'm like, yo, all I know is you got to do another verse because it's one verse. And his single, The Time's Up, was kind of just like not really getting a whole lot of love at Mix Show. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like, you know, we all knew that's him.
Yeah,
you know, everybody loved him, but that particular song, which was the lead single for his project, wasn't really drawing a lot of excitement.
Right.
Right? As sometimes singles do.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm like, you know, you got to do a second verse to that. Mm-hmm. And when you do the second verse, you need to shout out Mr. C, because that's where the drop came from.
Yeah.
You need to shout out Mr. C because we need to keep him happy, right? and he's going to play the shit out of it
because
it says his name.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, you're right. So, and he puts Mr. C verse, Mr. C name in the verse. Fun fact, the same week it starts popping, Flex, I'm listening to the radio, and Flex is with Mr. C on the radio. Remember Flex and C used to talk all the time on the radio?
Yeah.
He's going, yo, what's this song? What is this? What is this? And Mr. C goes, yo, oh, it's a Green Lantern thing. And Flex is getting ready to go in on me. And he goes, so did he take it from you? Did he? And Mr. C was like, no, he called. He called. He was like, okay, all right, Green Lantern. Okay. Good choice. Oh my god. We could be here all night.
Oh yeah, no. All right, two guns up.
Yeah.
Two guns up.
Which, by the way, and we've told this to Jada mm-hmm. when we had him on. We told to Styles when we had him on. Yes. Whenever we get Sheik, we'll tell him the same. The loudest we've ever heard, Giant Stadium, MetLife Stadium, whatever. The loudest we've heard New right. Jersey.
Believe that.
Is when there. They came out yes. to Two Guns Up at Summer Jam.
Yes.
Amazing.
Blew me away. Bloom that. Hearing that stadium say that.
To start their set.
Yo. So when I told you I did the Sunday night run, right? I was doing Sunday night. I wanted to make a big impact. So they were doing a D-Block thing at that time. They had Jay Hood.
Right.
Styles was locked up at this moment. He did a year.
Yeah.
So I had, I damn near bugged and begged, like, yo, can y'all come up here? It's my first week. I want a date. You know what I'm saying? I want to have an interview and a freestyle from y'all if you could. You know, they came up and we pre-recorded it. So we're in the back studio and we pre-recorded this freestyle and an interview and everything. And they freestyled, which, you know, they had written verses pre, you know, whatever, right? But it's technically called a freestyle, right? So they rapped over Bump That, right?
Yep.
The Mobb Deep thing, then 50 rapped on it before,
yep.
right?
Yep.
So, after that. So they rapped on that beat. But because we pre-recorded it, and because we were in a back studio, it was just like this, what you're recording on now, separate tracks. So I had to load the beat in, and the beat was separate from the vocals. Now, I'm not going to say that I'm an evil genius, but these are things that are just elementary to me. I have these vocals, and I'm already the acapella fiend.
Right.
So I'm already thinking as they're doing this, like, oh, I'm going to take this. I'm making this into a song. I already know this, right? So I air the interview, I air the freestyle, and I don't put it out. I don't put the freestyle out because I'm hoping nobody puts this out because people are ripping radio interviews and freestyles.
We have a lot of those.
Including yeah. you.
I'm hoping nobody grabs this and rips this because I have this acapella and this dude just made a crazy hook. That's how Kiss started his rhyme.
Oh, my God.
That's how he was the first. That's how he came in. So it was on his mind. Like, he was going to do that over something, right?
Yeah.
So as he's saying it, I'm like, oh, this is so crazy. I'm going to make something out of this, right? So it was like 3-4 months later, and I'm working on the conspiracy theory, the volume 2, the Shady Tape.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh, I got this acapella. I got this. And I put it together. I made an original beat. And, you know, put that whole thing together, made it like a little scratch hook for it. And I found, this is a shout to Super Mario. Super Mario was D-Block's consigliere,
yep.
you know, who's getting all the DJs, their freestyles and everything. And he would give me acapellas because this is me asking him, yo, you know those freestyles that you get to everybody? Can you just give me the acapellas? The stuff that's already been out. I'm good with it. I don't care.
Right.
Because I'm going to make something out of it. So that's where I took Styles' verse from, a freestyle that he did random for something else.
Oh, my God.
So it's really the only people who rapped on it live was Kiss, Sheik, and Jay Hood. And I added a Styles verse, right? So anyway, that appeared on, you know, this tape that had all of this beef and all this other stuff going on. But then right after, if you look at the tape, right after the whole beef section was that song.
Wow.
So that started the rest of the tape.
Yeah.
And then people was like, wait, yo, that's Hail Mary. That shit is crazy. But what's that? So that started getting play on the radio. That was really the first thing. That wasn't exactly the first thing that had gotten played. I made this years before that. What blew my mind when I was living in Rochester, I made this remix of Music Soul Child with a two-way beat to it. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And I gave it to Mr. C, and he was doing these bootleg vinyls of, like, remixes and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And he put it out, and he was playing it. And then Flex started playing it. And people were sending me tapes with Flex bombing it up. I'm still living in Rochester at this point. So, but the very next thing that happened after that was Two Guns Up. That started getting played. We made a white label.
Send it to Toronto.
at this time, I'm like, who needs Toronto? Shout out to Toronto.
What was that 50 line from, by the way?
That was from back down. Because all the harmony, yeah, it come from y'all. And I remember, there's no acapella to that. I literally called 54 Sound, and I talked to M's manager, I'm not, his engineer, and I said, because that was recorded there, was it recorded there? Or they had the masters of it or whatever, and I was like, yo, can I get the acapella of that? Because I needed that one line.
Yeah.
So I remember calling to get that line, because I was like, I was making the scratch hook, and I was like, and that line stuck into my, from when the first time I heard it, because that's what he's talking about, right? Is them.
Yeah.
Right? And DMX. Yeah. You know, yeah, obviously. Yeah, yeah. So I was like, oh, this fits. This is perfect. Oh, this is going to be the last line in the scratch hook. Right? And it made such an impact just having that little piece in there, you know?
Totally.
Continuity.
Yeah.
which this podcast has none.
there was a section of time in the mid 2000s where blending live and what was the term for it?
Mashups
became like the biggest thing. How'd you feel about that whole time?
I felt like that was the first time I ever felt like my culture got gentrified.
Jacked? Yeah.
That was my first experience with gentrification. Like, wait a minute. Y'all calling this a mashup? This is blends.
Right.
It's not a latte, it's coffee. So I'm like, mashup? What the hell is this?
Right.
It's a fucking blend.
Did it cost you gigs? Did it do you
nah,
feel
not at all. Would it actually helped me because there was
because you were a mashup DJ.
to them I was the supreme. They were getting it from guys like, you know, rest in peace, AM.
Sure, yeah.
And you know, guys like that, that were on a different page,
mm-hmm, yeah,
right? Very much a Vegas page, a Hollywood page, a lot of eyeballs from a different crowd.
Right.
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 And then when they saw me, they were like, whoa, that's intricate.
Yeah.
That's not just this beat with this acapella. He made hooks. He's, you know what I mean? He's
totally
making intros and outros and all of that. So it helped me.
Yeah, there was a deeper.
So you weren't just like, oh, here's Michael Jackson, and I'm going to put that under Nas. <And it's...
laughs> You've toured with Nas. You've toured with M.
Jay.
You've toured with Jay. Does it ever sort of hit you that you've worked with those, you know, legends? And that's a big part of your career.
I mean, yeah, obviously, like moments like right now when you say that, and then when you realize, look, those are huge figures, right? I'm my own little self in the culture, hip hop culture, DJ world, whatever that may be, right? But those are guys that will put you, if you're associated with them, affiliated with them, stand next to them, on a different level. You know what I mean? So I always look at it as a blessing to be able to say, you know, I'm, you know, probably humbly the only person that's ever like officially been those three guys.
But I think what matters just as much, the fact that you toured with these guys, is that you're a creative DJ, and these guys chose you to be their DJ. You're not just a push button DJ. Like, that says something, too. That says something about them and what they want from a live show.
But M and Jay, I feel like you had said before in some interview, they didn't allow you to be, like, fully out there.
Here's the thing with that. Yes and no. I won't say no, but yes. But with that being said, let me explain. They were both superstars when I came into their circle, and they were superstars that had been on tours and tours and tours and tours, and they knew what they were comfortable with on stage.
Yeah.
And they were used to putting the set list together themselves and handing it to someone saying, this is what I want to do, right? But also the reason why I got brought in is to do some creativity, right? So I was like, okay, cool. This is the boundaries. Let me work within these parameters. Okay, let me flip some beats here and here where I can.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I got to Nas, he's a different guy. He was like, you know what? I want you to put it together. Run it by me. I'll yay and nay it. We'll switch some stuff around, but I want you to be, you know, the guy that puts it together, you know, which I don't think anything is better. I just think that it's different.
Mm-hmm.
When you say that, when you say like they, you know, wanted my creativity or whatever, whatever. before becoming Jay's DJ, a couple of years before that, Jay flew me to LA to do some work on his set for the R. Kelly tour that he had.
Yep.
Remember the tour that exploded?
And yeah.
Went on
the one
Angie.
That went perfectly. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And so he had, you know, I'm at this time, I'm like, you know, I'm like, the all those tapes that came out, and it's like, well, his kid is doing things.
Yeah,
with,
yeah.
You know, so.
Oh, those tapes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You
yeah,
know.
Yeah. I thought you were talking about, you know, Jay's co-headliner.
Right, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the Peepee
right,
tapes.
Right, yeah.
So
this is the Unfinished Business tour, right?
Wasn't it? No, that was
that was 2004. Best of Both Worlds.
No, but I think Unfinished Business was the second.
This is the first one.
Okay, the first one.
Where
one that did not go well.
The one where they sprayed him.
Yeah. Right. I thought that was for the second one.
I think
it was for the second album. I don't.
Oh,
think
you
want to
know what? It might have been
album.
Because yeah. Why would they do it a second time if you had been maced?
I think.
Right. So whatever happened with the first one, but this is the second one.
Yes.
Anyway, he's like, look, this guy, these are his words. I mean, I'm paraphrasing because I don't exactly remember, but I remember him saying, look, this guy's got hit after hit after hit, and I got to come after him with my rap songs. So he's like, I want you to put together, make my set flow, some cool, you know, little slick tricks, right? Like, little scrappy song, You Don't Want No Problems, Problem. That was out at that time. So I was like, all right, well, let's do 99 Problems over and bring that hook in. You Don't Want No Problems. Then do like one of the verses over it. And he was like, oh, that. Exactly. Right. So I did like four or five of those.
Then he like closed the door on you and then went to he's like, yeah, more of that.
So then I see. Because I'm not the DJ for the tour or nothing. I just, you know, gave him these little elements. So then I see, like, the tour happen. And then I see, like, I'm hearing these reports that, like, R. Kelly is thinking that Jay-Z is showing him up on stage. So he's getting in his feelings and he's acting erratic and he's going to work at the McDonald's drive-thru. Remember these stories, right?
Yeah.
So in my head, I'm like, the things that I made for Jay-Z threw R. Kelly into the McDonald's drive-thru. I'm that good.
Or that evil.
I'm that evil. So even though, I mean, whatever, you know. But,
right.
It was just like a
that's
little.
That's amazing. Yeah. Okay, ready for this? Everyone knows at this point that Jay wanted to do a mixtape with you, that you guys did some stuff. It never came out, but we have recordings of some of the stuff that you played on air, like on Hot 97, right? ASAP, T.I.'s ASAP. And in my iTunes, so we'll go to like California for business and some rental car doesn't like work exactly with iPhone. So you plug it in and it goes to the first song in your playlist.
And it's always that song.
It's always that song.
It's always that song.
And it's always great. How many songs did you guys work on together?
Maybe a handful.
And do you ever like go back and listen to them yourself?
Nah, they're like, you know, on a hard drive that just sits somewhere, you know. It's been 11 years now.
Sure.
You know? A lot of those songs that were going to be on that tape, like what I try to do is I try to get things done. Right. So I knew we had a bunch of stuff in the vault. And by the time this happened when I was on the tour with him, like halfway during the tour, he mentioned something like, well, when you do my tape, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, your tape? Just don't play with me.
Right.
You know, so he was like, yeah. But this was right before Kingdom Come album was going to come out. So in his mind, it was like, this is the tape before my album. Right. So he was going to do a few freestyles or whatever, and we're going to go into the vault and play a bunch of, you know, stuff that he previously was like, it didn't make this album, it didn't make this album, whatever, right? One of the ones that he did was ASAP. He did that on the tour in the hotel room. Memphis Bleek operating the Pro Tools.
Wow.
I did not know Pro Tools at this time. I was being lazy. I had an 8-track hard disk recorder in the crib, and I was just like lazy to learn Pro Tools because my little 8-track did everything.
Wow.
But now I'm on this tour, and Memphis Bleek records himself on Pro Tools, like literally sits here and records himself, and it blew me away. So when Jay wanted to do, you know, some vocals on the tour. Guru was out with us at that. He actually linked up in the end of the tour to, so Jay could finish Kingdom Come. So he flew Guru out then. But before that, Memphis Bleek had to run the damn computer. I'm like, yo, this is so insane. This is so insane. We're in a hotel room in Africa, and he's rapping to this.
Oh, like, my God.
But it's like fan fiction.
Yo. But the illest part of it was how the idea of it came. This was a world tour, not excluding, there was no domestic, no America, but it was literally the whole world. And for the Africa part of it, everybody was on the same private jet because they didn't want to split people up and in Africa and have like something happen.
Sure,
right.
Right,
you
yeah.
know, the lighting director and the whatever, they're all going to get on the plane with us.
Right.
So for like 2 weeks, we're all on the same plane. So what I would do is I had my MPC 1000 that I had that I actually bought on tour, which is a whole nother story. But I'm at this point, this is him confirmed. He had confirmed he wanted to do a tape. So now I'm like, in my head, I got to come with some ideas.
Right.
So I knew he liked T.I., just from hearing things and whatever, interviews, whatever. So I was like, I'm going through my TI instrumentals. I'm trying to make these things happen, right? I'm trying to push it along, right? So I put the whole hook together over that
oh, back
beat.
In the building.
Back in the building. Yeah. Back in the back. Yeah. Right, right. That
we
was
we hear it every time we go to California. Yeah, yeah.
That's the acapella of What More Can I Say, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which from Black Album, right? So anyway, I remember being on the private jet. And I say it's very humbly. I'm not trying to stunt, but this is hip hop stories.
No, talk right? about
you
it. Talk about
you
it.
Want the story?
Let's yeah. do it.
So it would always be me sitting across from Bleek in the two chairs over here, and there was four chairs over here, and it's Jay, his mom, B, and probably like Lenny S.
Yeah.
And they're like playing spades or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just regular people stuff, right?
Yeah.
So I'm always in my headphones, just to myself, or me and Bleek off. Talking about rolling backwards or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So at this point, I'm like, man, I'm trying to land this. So I would make something in the MPC and hand him the headphones. He literally was like an aisle away from me. And
you handed it to Jay?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Listen to this.
Yeah.
And I did it a couple times with other stuff, and it didn't quite get a reaction. But then with this, he was like, he stopped what he was doing and just was like, whoa. So then, fast forward, maybe like 3-4 days later, he was like, "Yo, I want to record to that for the thing," you know.
Wow.
And end up doing it. Did a couple more that were like scratch versions of songs that never came out. Then we come home from the tour, and what happened was, I had to deduce this because I never kind of got an official reason why, but the tape got shelved.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel like it's because it was too close to the album coming out, which I say this again humbly, at that point I'm known for the guy that makes the mixtape that's better than the album.
Yeah,
I say it super humbly,
of course.
Right, and it's super close to the album. Right. On that tour, towards the end of the tour, we started performing Show Me What You Got with the album date behind on the screen.
Yeah.
And in the back of my head, I'm like, damn, I hope this tape. But the tape is going to be all original music. So it can't be too close to this
right.
thing. Right. Or else it's going to be like,
yeah.
right, overshadowing it, whatever.
You're making
right?
people choose.
Right.
Yeah.
So tape gets derailed. I'm still Green Lantern, the mixtape DJ.
Yeah.
Right? So.
And the producer. Don't sell yourself short. Yeah. yeah.
But I'm getting ready to do a mixtape.
Yeah.
Now this is like 6 months later. So I'm like, what do I got? What do I got? So I start really, in my mind, I'm deducing, okay, anything from this tape, what can I play from this tape? Right? I can't play this. That's an original beat.
Right.
That, because he might want to do something with that song. Whatever song it was, but I get to the ASAP and I'm like, wait a minute, it's T.I.'s beat. He's doing T.I.'s flow,
mm-hmm.
So theoretically, he's not going to take those rhymes and put them on an original beat. So it ain't one of those,
right? So theoretically, he can't be mad.
Theoretically, he can't be mad.
Right?
Boy, was I wrong. fairies. It didn't work.
So did he call you and say,
or did Lenny call you?
Nah, Carlene.
Carlene called you.
Carlene.
She said, buy two tickets.
You get to have two tickets.
Whenever this how it was. Yeah. When you would get the unknown come up on your phone.
Yeah.
Nobody else was hitting me from the unknown,
right,
except her saying, I have Jay for you. So this is the day, the day after this tape came out, and obviously that was right there, and it, because it's Jay, everybody hears it, and it becomes a thing,
yeah,
and it got to him. He called me, and he was, what are you doing? I was like, yo, you know, it's you know, his vocals, and you know what I'm saying, it's his flow. He was like, but did you ask me? I was like, no. I felt like such a kid. I was like a 5-year-old on his phone, and he was like, don't do that again. Don't do that again.
Oh man.
If you want to play something, call me. Respect me. I respect you. And what was I going to say to that? But right. Yo, my bad.
Yeah.
You know, and after that, Dead Presidents 3, the snippet got leaked. And because I had put ASAP out, he thought it was me. But it wasn't me.
Oh. And I was like, exclusive.
No.
Yeah.
It got put on like a one of the mixtape guys' tapes.
Yeah.
Right? And it was a snippet. It wasn't even the whole thing.
Right.
And I'm like, yo, why would I do that? Right. I don't get no look off of that.
Right. Yeah. Right?
What, right. I sold it or whatever. Like, this, it was serious.
Yeah.
This was like, yo, you know, this was like, yo, dog, you know what I'm saying? You were like in a doghouse right now, bro. You know? And then, you know, it was like, I remember this was Thanksgiving. Like, I just remember I was at my sister's house, and I'm getting these texts, and he's texting me like, yo, this is whack, dog. Why? Because he's thinking I did it because I did put the ASAP out.
Yeah. Right, yeah,
you know what I'm saying? And I'm like trying to tell me, yo, that shit wasn't me.
Right.
But you can't tell somebody who already is like, you already showed yourself. When people show you who they are, believe them. That thing, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, damn, man. Had I not put the ASAP out, it would have been, yo, it wasn't me.
Right.
Yeah. And they would have just kept it moving on. Yeah, who else did it?
Right.
But because Green, you know, I get it. I totally get it. So I was in the doghouse for a minute.
Wow.
A couple months.
Yeah.
but everything got, you know, he was like, it's cool. It's cool.
Yeah.
He still thought I did it, but he was like, yo, it's cool. It's cool.
You didn't.
Nah, I didn't.
I know. You know, I'm saying.
I hope he listens to this podcast. I
know. Jay, didn't do it!
Guys, we just wanted to take one more second away from this interview with DJ Green Lantern to remind you that on September 6th, we're going to London and doing a live podcast with
DJ Semtex, DJ motherfucking Semtex, who has talked to everybody. From Jay-Z, Kanye West, DJ Khaled, and Drake, and now these two idiots.
There's so much history there. Def Jam UK. There's a lot to cover. It's going to be a great evening. September 6th. You can get your tickets right now
at itsthereal.com/London. Eric and I are going to be getting the Learjet out of the garage and flying it straight over to Heathrow to talk to DJ Semtex and to all of you. I believe there's going to be a Q&A and a meet and greet sort of situation that we're working out. This event is being brought to you guys by our good friends over at the Creative Content Agency and Project Gersh.
Shout out to those guys. We appreciate them bringing us out to London. It's going to be a hell of an event. Get your tickets right now. itsthereal.com/London. And now back to the Evil Genius. You broke our New York radio hearts when you went down to Atlanta.
See, you thought this was going somewhere else. Which we can talk about that.
What's that?
I mean, you've talked about in other interviews, like, how you felt when the Jadakiss phone call got leaked and all that. But I want to talk about you squashing the beef with Jadakiss. You went up to a restaurant in Yonkers.
Yep. Around, this is before his next, which was the third album, Kiss My Ass, was getting ready to come out. And Def Jam had called me. And was like, yo, we want you to do, you know, he getting ready to come out with an album. We want you to do the mixtape. We want y'all to patch it up. This was like 3 years later. Mm-hmm. It was 08, so it was 3 years later. You know, how do we fix this? How do we, you know, it's been 3 years, like, right? So, you know, and I hadn't, hadn't had any communication with him, and you know, he had said a couple things like, I apologize, and you know, I had heard from other people that he felt really bad and all of that, but you know, it really came from Def Jam wanting me to do the next tape, initiating, okay, well, obviously if that tape is gonna happen, these guys gotta meet up and, you know, figure that shit out.
Right.
Like, so that's how that happened. That was like, you know, Def Jam had to do XYZ, and then I had to have a man to man with him. So that's what it was. It was like, meet at this restaurant by yourself. He's gonna come by himself. Sat down, and it was, you know, man to man convo of, you know, him saying to me what he said, you know, and we put it behind. And it is what it is.
Yeah.
How was the food?
I didn't eat nothing.
It does feel like a mafioso sort of thing. Like, you show up alone, you show up alone
to at an Italian restaurant.
Yeah. In Yonkers.
I guess, yeah. You know, but because, I mean, really, it was, I guess, the whole show up alone was like, you know, just kind of calculating, like, yo, we don't want nothing to go sideways.
Right.
If anybody's feeling a certain way or whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
So I get it. But, you know, it was just one of them things, like, you know, hashed it out, talked it out, you know, people said their piece,
yeah,
and put it behind.
So you go down to Atlanta.
Yes, sir.
Why?
I wanted to branch out. You know, I wanted to, like, I was going down there. My homeboy Stan lived there. And I was going down there to visit, and I just caught the vibe. Like, this is like really vibrant down here, and I'm catching a lot of love down here from what I've done.
Or you were going down there for a Mace exclusive.
Because he lived in Atlanta.
Yeah.
So I went down there to get a Mace exclusive.
Yeah.
And then, so my boy DJ Greg Street was on V103 every day. He's like the Funk Flex of Atlanta.
Sure.
Welcomed me in, was like, yo, you can come mix on the radio up here. And, you know, I was doing a bunch of clubs and stuff down there, running around as a producer in the studios, doing a bunch of work with this one and that one, and just ended up just getting a crib and just, you know, moving the family there. So that was a few years down there, like three or so.
Yeah. So if you know, D-Block and those guys were like your real, and you know, and obviously all the labels are up here and everything. If that was your New York sort of like focus, like who were the guys down in Atlanta who really, like, you know, found their way to you, artist wise?
Artist wise, like Killer Mike, like Rocco. Trouble, Alley Boy, you know, these guys that were like bubbling in the streets with, you know, they would put their mixtapes in the gas stations. Like, that was a big spot, you know, for people to buy music, was in the gas stations. It's a lot of people, like Roscoe Dash, like, this is that era. This is 2010.
Right, yeah, right.
So it was like, you know, Travis Porter, like, you know.
Did Rocco bring Future by?
You know, what's funny is that he was supposed to. And this is when he was presenting him as his brother. He was like, yo, I'm going to bring my brother Future. And I was doing my radio show, my Sirius show, from Drama's studio, because Drama had an ISDN line, which allows you to broadcast live from somewhere and go to somewhere else. And it sounds like we're all in the same room.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's how we're doing this.
That's how we're doing this, right? So he was supposed to bring Future one night and whatever. He just, you know, didn't show up or whatever. So we just had a regular, you know, show. But, you know, this obviously was before Future was anything.
Like, yeah.
It wasn't even, you know, Magic wasn't out. None of the big hits were out. It was just like, you know, him actually, you know, saying, yeah, here's my new artist.
Right.
Scenario.
Yeah.
But then after that, I got with Future. And like Future actually did my birthday party in Atlanta, on some, you know, thanks for supporting me on the radio, because I was going crazy on the radio playing Future songs.
Wow. Because you mentioned Mr. C.
But that's really honestly just me tapping into the call. 2 Chainz, that's another one.
Ooh.
2 Chainz.
See, that's, wait, those are like the you know how on Pee Wee's Playhouse, when you say like a word, like all the confetti comes down?
I never watched Pee Wee's Playhouse, bro.
Really?
That's suspect.
Yeah. Well, if you say 2 Chainz in this house,
we go crazy.
Oh,
like, that's our guy. Like,
but it's like your safe word?
Titty. Yeah.
So he's Titty Boy, mind you. So I know him from when they came on my radio show in New York as Player Circle.
Yeah.
And as, so it's him and Dollar Boy. So I know them from that. And they came and they freestyled and everything. This is when Duffel Bag Boy was out. So
big record.
Here I go. Now I live in Atlanta. I'm catching up with people. I'm just working, right? And I'm being the mixtape DJ, radio DJ, who's connecting, who's a producer, who's connecting with the active guys that are in the market. Titty Boy is one of them. So he was, at this point, he was Titty Boy, a.k.a. 2 Chainz. That was just his nickname.
Right.
And he was putting out mixtapes, and he was doing, like, the Chitlin' Circuit, which is Alabama and all these, you know, southern areas radiating out from Atlanta. So he was just another guy that's working, you know, and, you know, remembers now the early stage of you know, Green Lantern going in for them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So your next birthday party, no, you know, Tech and, you know.
Yeah. Tech and Charlie, what's up?
Here's the gem of all gems. As far as I know, you've never said it. We tried to get the answer from you when we saw you down in Austin, like for Austin City Limits 5-6 years ago, or whatever that was. Where is your drop from?
Green Lantern.
Yeah.
That's Lex Luthor from the cartoon Justice League talking about Green Lantern. So that's Lex Luthor's voice saying, Green Lantern, also the evil genius. He's talking about himself. That was Lex Luthor saying Green Lantern and the evil genius.
The evil genius.
Amazing.
Have you ever had, and I meant to ask this to, we just saw Clark Kent do a talk at
with
Ted
Smooth. Yeah.
And I was going to ask if Clark had ever had any copyright issues. Have you ever had any copyright issues?
I've flown under the radar this far.
Yeah, private jets.
And I've put out a few commercial things, like Grand Theft Auto 4. I was part of that, and we released some music. And I released an album with Dead Prez. I released an album with Styles P. And the wording on those were the evil genius DJ Green Lantern.
Mm.
Meaning, the problem people have with copyright is what's confusion. It's like the original brand, which would be DC Comics, you know, Green Lantern via DC Comics, which owns that.
Mm-hmm.
They would say, you, DJ Green Lantern, are causing confusion in the marketplace, and you have a product out that people think is our comic book guy, but it's really this DJ playing these dirty rap songs.
Right. If you were dressed up in a costume as Green Lantern from the comics,
then it's satire.
So, like I said, knock on wood, I've walked the line with it. I've given myself some safety net. Mm-hmm. You know, if and when a cease and desist came or a lawsuit or whatever.
Yeah.
Well,
good thing you're sitting with two Jews right now, so we can go to court for you.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to let you go before you talk about your new project.
Yes.
Or at least a song. You know, there was new music that you sent us yesterday.
Ah, yes.
Called Ill.
Yes.
And it's dope.
Yes, indeed.
I like how...
And it's hip-hop.
Yeah.
I like how surprised you are.
Yes. Because I really actually thought he was going to talk about this little electronic side project that I have.
Well, okay. I mean, so Jeff did bring that up before, like, before you got here, Jeff.
Right.
Was just
did
like,
you miss hip-hop?
You know what's funny? And this is what I say.
Hip-hop, the genre. Not like...
Did you miss hip-hop?
Not person. Joshua.
Right. Shout the hop.
Yeah.
So, around 11 or 12, 2011, 2012, I started getting a little, what's the word? Frustrated, disenchanted with the weekly grind of having a radio show and having guests and trying to make these guests rap so I could have content that you could then repurpose and put on YouTube and here and there and have a big show. Right. And I just wanted to play music. I just wanted to make beats, play records. But I was Green Lantern on that, you know, that weekly slot on Hip Hop Nation. And this week he got Rick Ross. And next week he got Styles P and the whole round table of people freestyling. And you got to have more of those moments and more of those moments. But it gets to be a grind putting those together. Right. So it started to wear on me. So at the same time, I started like branching out musically as far as what I'm making, right, into electronic music. So I started like really digging like Pretty Lights and like Grammatic and you know, these guys like that that are very hip hop based. And it looked like, to me, it was like, wow, this is actually, if you look at it, like, it's very much more like pure in the hip hop sense. There's no rap politics that goes along with this. I'm not chasing a rapper for a verse. These are producers that have found a way to become the main guy on the stage. No rapper needed.
Right.
And in our world, in the hip hop world, it's rapper based. So at most, you are, I used to call it glorified help. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a downplay of what we do, but I'm keeping it real with you. DJ Khaled is the biggest thing on earth, but can he release those songs without those verses?
Right. Right.
Absolutely not.
Right.
You can't have that number one song without those verses. So in effect, you, my friend, must chase rappers to get those verses done. And guess who's chasing rappers? Everybody else.
Yeah.
And those rappers are rappers. Love them, but come on, bro.
Right, right.
Right? They do what they want to do when they want to do it.
Yep.
And they get amnesia about how much you helped them. So I'm getting all this frustration. I'm like, you know what? F the rap game. I'll divorce the rap game, and hopefully years later I'll come back for hip-hop. So I look at it like I had to divorce the rap game to fall back in love with hip-hop.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The rap game being the corporate structure of radio and all of that. I was telling this to people that's still in it right now. They're like, yo, you crazy, bro. Just do it. Just stop. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm like, I'm giving up the radio show. No one does this.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Literally, this was a conversation I had with Drama. And he was like, dude, don't give up that radio show. Don't do that. Just stick it out, man. Just, it is a phase.
This is just like when R. Kelly started working at McDonald's.
Exactly, right? And I was like, yo, I got to go, bro. It's not in my heart no more. I'm saying shit like that.
Yeah, yeah,
like, this ain't, you know, hip-hop is. So that's why when you mention the new music that's hip-hop, like Ill featuring Conway and Royce da 5'9", what does that sound like?
Available right now.
Available right now. It's very hip hop. There's nothing political about it. There's nothing me trying to make a hit.
But you had to leave Atlanta. You had to leave hip hop, and you had to come back on your own terms.
I know it sounds dramatic, for my sanity.
Well, no, actually, it does not sound dramatic at all.
Dramatic.
Dramatic.
He told you not to do it.
Exactly. But not for real. Like, I know it sounds like a Lifetime movie. I had to divorce hip hop to, you know, or divorce rap to fall in love with hip hop.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's,
no, that sounds like a Common song.
Oh yeah, bro, that's my Common impression. Oh, love, bro, love. Yeah, salute, respect, yo. That's my Common impression. But so to, you know what I'm saying, to not have those, you know, this guy's album's coming out, get him on, you know, that type of pressure, when I'm just like, I'm in this whole other space, and I'm like, damn, man, I want to just be creative and try my hand over here where I can be the main guy.
How'd that feel?
Amazing.
Yeah.
So I'm on stage, and there's like no rapper there.
Mm-hmm.
It's me. You know what I'm saying? And they're like reacting to music that I put out, and there's thousands of people in front of me, and I'm like, this is crazy, you know? So, and at the same time, I'm still DJing, you know, touring with Nas, but I'm doing it under Green Lantern. I'm doing it under DJ Green Lantern. I'm making this different music, this electronic music. And I feel like, in the back of my head, I'm like, this feels like I should do this under a different name, you know? So it took me a minute, like a couple years, to actually wrap my head around, like, doing it. Like, you know what? I'm going to take DJ Green Lantern back to hip-hop and the realest sense of hip-hop, not the rap game, and I'm gonna make a whole other thing that I'm gonna do all electronic music under that name, so I don't confuse people that know and love Green Lantern for all these hip-hop moments when I put out something and it's like
James Wan.
you know what I'm saying? So I have this whole other thing, and it's like in the, I released one song, but I'm working on an EP for it, and it's like, it's very free, and it's very like, you know, it feels right. yeah. to do it in that way.
Yeah.
Are you keeping it a secret just because you want the two things?
No, it's not a secret. Okay. It's not a secret at all. Okay. It's just my side project.
Yeah.
It's like, that's what I do this under this name. This is what you can expect. And on DJ Green Lantern is going to be this.
Yeah. Where are you now in terms of like...
I'm on Street.
You know we're going to have to
Upper West Side. Yeah.
We don't want people outside our door with mixtapes like trying to get signed up here because...
Remember those days.
We can't do anything. Yeah. Actually, did anybody wait outside for you at Hot 97 and you give them your time, or were you like, hey, you bring some guy and be like, well, you have to battle him first?
Yeah. As you know, during that era, everybody waited outside.
Everybody.
No, everybody.
But who, who now? Like Graf or like Mano or Gravy?
Yeah, not specifically like waiting outside like on some Green Lantern and Mano.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
well, no, because I mean, there was a Mano before he was Mano, you know.
True indeed. But you know, those guys like they had cosigns, like like Graf came in through Slim, through Black Hand Chaz. Mm-hmm, yep. So you would just get the call like, yo, Chaz want to send you something, or you come and listen to this or whatever. Same thing with Mano.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So. You know, but there, like I said, there was a bunch of, and there was people that would meet you there, like that I would be like, yo, and they know that you're coming on this day, and they're going to make a freestyle for you and meet you out front. That was all day for those guys.
Yeah.
So all of those guys would meet you there just to get their joint played, but not in the sense of he's anonymous. Those guys were there,
right?
But not a lot of those guys got their stuff listened to because mm-hmm. There's so much stuff that a lot of it, sad to say, some of it got to come through a filter in order to get your attention because it's just too much.
Yeah.
All right. So your new single has Conway. It has.
It's not a single. It's just a song.
Right.
Single has pressure.
Right. There's no date behind
nothing.
You.
Right. Yeah. Nothing.
But it has Conway. It has Royce the 5'9". Yes. I feel like it's missing one shady artist. What's your relationship like now with Bizarre?
fuck that fat motherfucker. Nah, man, I love Busy. Bizarre's the best. He's like unafraid.
Yeah.
He does not care.
Do you have any projects that you are overseeing or want to oversee? Or does someone just, you know, sort of come out of the woodwork and say, you know what? Let's bring it back to that, like, 99 Green Lantern, and like, let's put something out for the people on SoundCloud, whatever, and just like, you take control.
Eric's just asking you if it's the real Kendua project.
That's all I'm asking.
No, but I will tell you, West Side Gun, that's how that came about.
Is it that like Western New York sort of like, you know?
Well, that's one layer of it because they're from Buffalo. I'm from Rochester. Mm-hmm.
Shouts to Lackawanna.
So, you know, obviously they saw that coming up. They saw, you know, everything I did and all of that. But here they come buzzing, bubbling, and I'm watching it. And I actually reached out to him about a year before we started working there. I was like, I see you.
Wow.
You know, like when Fly God came out. And he was like, yo, you know, just, you know, respect type of thing, like, yo, you know. And then, like, in December, I got the call that they were going to, and wasn't publicized yet, but they were probably going to go to Shady, and they wanted to do a tape as, like, a catch-up version, a catch-up compilation of all of the stuff they had put out, like a best of, for the new fans that they're going to get because they're about to sign to Shady Records. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, you take a handful of the best stuff and then put some new stuff on it.
Yep.
So he has a series called Hitler Wore Hermes Hermes, and so that's why this turned into Hitler on Steroids. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Which then turned into Conway Reject on Steroids because he had a tape called Devil's Reject,
right?
Which now is turning into Conway Part Two. That's called More Steroids, and Benny, their artist, Butcher on Steroids, which then I have a t-shirt line called Invasion on Steroids.
It makes sense.
But to answer your question, it was straight up and down like, yo, we want you to take this existing music and make a movie out of it, right? Like, make it exciting, these songs that a certain amount of people heard before,
right?
A certain amount of people haven't, but even for the people that did, make that shit exciting.
We were talking to West Side Gun about they're going to come up. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be dope.
I think he told me that. I think we were talking about you guys in a very bad way.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That sounds
And he was like, yeah, yeah, they're on my ass, too.
We are those guys who wait outside of Hot 97 and press all the DJs. Nice. Show up on our show.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Your career meant so much to us.
Means so much to us.
You know, don't do the past tense, bro.
No, it means
I'm
so much.
I'm still contributing.
To us.
Yeah, yeah. You can Google.
And no, I remember Green Lantern. He was a nice guy.
No, you know what gets me is, yo, what you used to do, boy? Yo. I'm like, I hate this.
Listen, we appreciate what you continue to do for the culture. Your entire career.
I appreciate what you guys do, because this is cultural, what you guys are doing. Like, especially taking this podcast and your live events that you've done and turning them more into cultural events, like what you just did with the Rockefeller thing. Like, you know, you're putting your creativity together, you're putting your Rolodex in motion and saying, okay, I know this guy could lead to that guy, this guy could call that other guy, and wait a minute, we have a whole show here.
Yeah.
Right? And that could, you know, really turn into something bigger and move on to other things.
Oh, we appreciate that. Yeah. Thanks for coming through.
Listen, if you want to be a guest on it, fine.
No, this is all you get. This is it.
Thanks so much, Green.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real and... Sorry, what's that?
So even though we just ended...
Yes.
I said, you know, no. It's not over. I want to bring my son, who's here with me, into it because I feel like this is, like, very hip-hop to be a dad that now has a grown-ass son that does what I do. And he is, his name is Najee. He's 22 years old. And he is a DJ, producer, rapper, singer.
Multi-hyphenated.
And the impetus of that.
Yes, the genesis.
The genesis, Phil Collins, of that is, he's literally probably has more stamps than I do in my current passport, not the old ones, but he's toured the world. He DJs for I Love Maconan, one of the new guys, and he's been around the world 3-4 times. But he's also a party DJ. He's now on Ableton producing. He, you know, puts the whole show together, and he started out as rapping and like sort of singing. And I had him like on Sway in the Morning one time. He has like a really dope ass song, and the funny thing about it is he is very extremely talented, but he ended up not wanting to put like go the artist route, this, you know, the, cuz at the end of the day he still has to convert people to becoming fans of his if he wants to make a living at this. And you know, and he was like, you know what, I see so many of these guys, because I let him in behind, you know, our lives are behind the curtain, right? So he, living in this life with me, has seen behind the curtain,
right,
and seen what these artists really go through, right, and seen how it's not promised. And you know, he was like, you know what, I'm looking forward to my future. He's always wanted to be a pilot from when he was a kid. And he was like, you know what? We gave him the choice to either go to college when he was done with high school. And he ended up saying, like, he joined a program where he could become a pilot through a program where he starts X amount of years as being a flight attendant. So that's what he's doing right now.
There's a lot to unpack there. Number one, how many sky miles do you have?
Actually, being a flight attendant, they don't give you sky miles, which is the crazy part about it. He asked me that before.
You don't have a status? You're just like...
I don't.
But you can get on whatever flight you want?
That's
or
how I got here, yeah. I was literally done working last night. My flight was crazy delayed. I was supposed to go back to Arizona last night, but I ended up working a flight to Orlando, Florida. I spent the night in Orlando, Florida last night. I knew Dad was coming out here today, so I was like, well, that's close enough, so just catch a flight to New York.
And how do you balance work with your other work, your creative work?
Right, so being a flight attendant is really flexible. You can pay people to, you know, take your trips per se from you. So I'll throw somebody like 100, 200 bucks or whatever to take this trip that I'm scheduled to work.
And the trip is like 3-4 days at a time.
Right. So I'll just do that and I'll go on the road with McConan.
That's awesome.
It's working, yeah.
Singing, rapping.
Yep.
DJing.
Yes. And very heavy into DJing.
And right DJing now. Parties.
Right.
So is your schedule just like insane? Plus work.
I mean, I try to make it insane just because I don't want to ever see myself just sitting at home. Like, I hate that. Like, when I'm home for a long period of time, like, and a long period of time for me is like 4 days. When I'm home for that amount of time, I hate it. Like, I talk to my dad, like, we'll go drive and pick up the kids from school or whatever. And I'm like, I got to go back to work. Like, it sucks being home like this. The schedule's not as crazy as it could be, but I guarantee you in about a couple months it will be. You guys will see.
Well, and your own stuff?
Yes.
Can you give us a hint?
I can't, not yet.
See, he learned. I know. He learned.
Were your formative years in Atlanta?
That's where I started. Music was in Atlanta.
Right.
That's where I started my rapping, my singing, and I made a record to the Young and Beautiful Lana Del Rey when The Great Gatsby came out, which was really dope, and he liked it, and a lot of people liked it. So that's kind of what caught me into it.
Atlanta is, you know, Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Trap music.
Yeah, but like, does New York music of, like, you know, the mixtape era mean much to you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Just coming up after him, and I started being able to comprehend it when the Invasion series were coming out with Eminem, when he was doing all that stuff, like, probably from 02 on was when I started being able to comprehend it, and that's really as far as I can remember.
That's a good starting point.
Yeah, and it's really dope. I remember, like, you guys were the Nail in the Coffin record that y'all were talking about before.
Yeah, yeah.
My mom and I can sing that word for word, like, till this day.
Your mom and you have problems with Benzino.
I know.
Yeah.
This is also going to be great when we come to Arizona and stop by
you
for
know
dinner.
What's crazy?
Like, we're all going to be,
you
like,
know,
you
what's
know?
Crazy? When I went to high school, I went to high school with Benzino's daughter.
Huh? Wait, did she find that as funny as we do?
We never talked.
Yeah.
We didn't talk.
Where can people find your music?
People can find my music right now on SoundCloud. My name, I go under the name of DJ Tango 12 right now.
The number 12?
No.
Okay.
TANGOTWELV. No E at the end of
okay.
the 12.
Gotcha.
You can look me up on SoundCloud. I release mixes. I can't tell you that name is probably not going to be there for too much longer. That's the hint that I can give you
okay.
guys. Yeah.
So people are looking for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But trust me, like, go to everything Tango 12 right now.
Yeah.
Follow it and you'll see the change after you follow it. It'll just pop up.
What's the scene like in Arizona right now?
Like the music scene?
Yeah.
Is whack.
It, right. So do you not like perform, hang out, do stuff down there?
I just
do,
travel to other cities in his free flights.
But I do parties in Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta, Arizona.
Yeah.
I do a lot of, you try to make it
as not whack as
because
the scene may be.
I just emphasize the whole I Love McConan's DJ thing, and
yeah,
all
sure.
the kids latch onto that. They love I Love McConan
out there.
So that's what really gets me a lot of the
Do parties. You ever, like, fuck with them and just put, like, Tuesday on really early in the set? Like,
I've never played Tuesday at a set.
Never?
No.
Not even on a Monday?
No. I love that record, but no, I've just never played it.
Do you debut your records, like, when you're at parties?
Yeah, absolutely. I've just... Really, it's the only stuff of mine that I've played at a party is just like blends and mixes that I'll do, you know, literally just following in his footsteps.
Right.
Like, we were driving not too long ago. I used to live in Houston because I was based out there as a flight attendant and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I was driving back, and literally it's like a 19-hour drive from Houston to Phoenix. And me and Dad talked the whole time, and I finally got to hear the stories that some of the stories that he just told y'all, other stories I've, like, he literally just told y'all the first time.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But I literally gained a whole new respect for what he did. And now I'm coming after, and I'm kind of doing the same things that he's doing, but just in a smaller aspect.
That's
you know?
Dope.
So just be on the lookout for that. That's
for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tango 12 for now.
For now, yes, absolutely.
Soon, something else.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real. Jeff, if people want to find out more about us, if people want to find out more about this podcast, A Waste of Time with It's the Real, if people want to go get their tickets for A Waste of Time live in London, September 6th, where we're interviewing DJ Semtex, where can they go?
You can get those tickets at itsthereal.com/London. You can also go and check all of our old episodes out at soundcloud.com/A Waste of Time. You can also search for episodes on iTunes. Search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. We are on all streaming services, every single one, even the ones that we forget to mention. Go to whatever service you want to use. I don't care what it is, but go listen to it there. Search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. We are also on Instagram at It's the Real, Facebook at It's the Real, Twitter at It's the Real. You can find us on Snapchat at It's the Real and It's the Real Eric. It's the Real is a terrible name, but It's the Real was taken.
Go to youtube.com/It's the Real right now, and in a couple of days, I think we're finally going to have the video from our big Rockefeller show at Highline Ballroom, where we had a dozen Rockefeller employees, you know, from Just Blaze to Young Guru to Lenny S to Chaka Pilgrim to Biggs to Young Guns and Jim Jones.
Keep going.
And Freeway.
Keep going.
And it was an amazing night. It's a totally awesome experience to watch it as opposed to listen to it, as opposed to just being in the building. YouTube.com/It's the Real. Shout out to Carl Lunds, who's the man who directed and edited the thing. And if you want to listen to our music, go to soundcloud.com/It's the Real.
We are also on all streaming services with our music. You can go to Spotify, you can go to Apple Music, you can go to Pandora, you can go
Tidal. Go to Tidal.
Go to Google Play, go to wherever you want.
Yeah, just press play, listen to our music, especially Sugar High, featuring Currency and Smoke Dizzo, which is our most popular song right now, and it's moving. Keep it going. Jeff, you know this podcast isn't going anywhere if we don't shout out some people and tell them to keep the word out there. Who would you like to tell about this podcast?
I want to tell Andy Bustard.
Hey!
Over in Manchester, which is 2 hours away from London.
By
he
train.
Says that he is going to be making it, hopefully, to our show out there. I want to shout out John Murugasu.
Okay.
Over in London as well. I feel like I have a lot of Facebook friends over in London. I hope they all show up to our London show.
Let them know.
Yeah.
Guys, I want to shout out one of our great friends, Amir Abbasi. I know I've talked about him before on the podcast at Blame the Label on all your social media things like Instagram and Twitter.
Right, but only because It's the Real was taken.
But here's the thing about Amir. He's not only one of the most positive people in this business, he's one of the most brilliant people.
Amir is one of Freeway's best friends and also one of our best friends, so it's always good to hear from him. Go follow him at Blame the Label. Also, Amir should get excited because we are taking this show on the road. We are coming to Los Angeles and Chicago and Philly.
Wherever the airports go, King
Akron,
Larry.
Akron, Ohio, I don't know.
King Larry, get the car gassed up. Now for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
We'll see you guys next week.